Hello again. It's with pleasure that I introduce to you our next speaker. He's doing a question and answer with Dr. Infantis. It's David Klanikin. He has very recently been appointed the commissioner for Canada's newest domestic men's soccer league, the Canadian Premier League. If you had a Tim Hortons coffee this morning, you are also familiar with his work. He was instrumental in developing the iconic brand that Tim Hortons is today. He also, on the weekends, has time between his extensive business work and philanthropy, plays soccer with the Burlington Men's Soccer League, and today he is joining us on stage with Dr. Nick Bontas. Well, please welcome David Klanikin.
Taylor, that was awesome. She did it all out by heart. Amazing. So we decided to do a Q&A. I'm very, very proud to be here with my colleague, David Klanikin. For those of you that don't know a little bit of background, David was appointed commissioner of the Canadian Premier League maybe just a few weeks ago, so he's fresh and new, honeymoon period on the job. The league, for those of you that don't know, is scheduled to start next spring of 2019, and more importantly, the first founding club of the new Canadian Premier League will be here in Hamilton, which was sanctioned by Canada Soccer last spring. So I've got a lineup of questions. I'm going to take my phone out because it's, you know, digital generation day. Keep it nice and light here. And then after I'm done, you guys also have an opportunity for Q&A as well. So if you want to ask somebody who's running our new soccer league any questions, write those down and keep them in mind. So my first question, just for background, tell us a little bit about yourself, Dave. Obviously, you have a very extensive background, you know, culminating in Tim Hortons, a brand we all know about. So let's start there before we talk soccer.
Sure. So as Taylor and Dr. Montes have said, I grew up working in the Tim Hortons business. I went to work when I was 14 years of age. It was my first job ever. Back then, they were able to pay you $2 an hour and all the donuts you could eat. So I think the owners went broke on the donuts that I ate. But I learned the business from the ground up at that point in time. I worked for the company for over 35 years. And so just recently, obviously, why do I tell you a little bit of that? Well, because of the company that Tim Hortons is, we spent a lot of time with sports in Canada. And all the markets we're in, because it's a community-type business, we spend a lot of time, a lot of effort, and obviously a lot of funds supporting sports in Canada. I'm very most proud of our Timbit sports program, because obviously it's 5 and 6 year olds that we support. We have over almost a million children in Timbit sports of one kind or another in Canada right now, which is tremendous, especially considering that we don't necessarily get all those funds from the municipalities and provinces and the federal government anymore. So for me, that's very important. And in actual fact, we have over 300,000 children playing Timbit soccer, which is obviously very near and dear to my heart. So why do I tell you the Tim Hortons piece? Probably because I was able to learn quite a bit from a business acumen perspective, going through the business, and even while I went to university and did my honors bachelor of commerce at Windsor. So we spent a lot of time in that business, and so I've been able to take those skills along with my passion for sport, and those two things are now intersecting, if you want to call it, around soccer and what I call the development of a professional soccer industry. Very excited about it. We've got a great team. We've been making announcements about new people coming on. So I'm very, very, very impressed with the people I'm working with and with the owner groups that we're talking to for potential clubs. And we're off to the races so far.
Well, we're very happy to have you on board, Dave. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, why the CPL, why now? I mean, what's the importance in terms of timing? You know, what are the forces that are coming at play that actually make this even a viable thing to think about?
Well, I usually talk about a few things, but first and foremost, if you look at what's happening in Canada from a demographic perspective, and the reality is, soccer really is, or football as we like to call it elsewhere, is really the only global sport that's out there. So you look at what's happening with the demographics here, everyone has been exposed to soccer at one point or another, so there's great change there. The second thing is, obviously, and this is certainly true in Canada with the success of the national women's team and their successes, you see the amount of both males and females
young and older, all playing the game now. And so very interested. It appeals to everybody. The third thing is it's obviously affordable, so therefore people are very interested in playing it, and parents are putting their kids into it because they want their kids to be active, right? And that's very important in what we do. And then the last two items I talk about are, you look at a very passionate group of owners that want to, that are patients, that have patience, and have the vision to know that this is not going to happen overnight, it's going to have to build. But they have that patience, and they are thinking, and they use the word legacy when I first talked to them, and they're talking about developing a legacy. All of that in a bag of chips doesn't add up to one other thing, and that is the digital age that we're in today, and a little thing called FIFA, right, on EA Sports. Because when you look at what's happened with soccer, and I see people nod their heads right now, I have a 13-year-old, quite frankly, that knows more about soccer globally than I do. Right? And when I grew up, we followed one team. Yes, I'm from Scotland. Yes, I'm a Glasgow Rangers fan. But back then, you know, I had to go and pay $10 to go with my father, who paid $20 to watch a satellite game, one game on Saturday morning, that type of thing when I was growing up. Today, on TV, you can watch, I mean, I think I watched four games last weekend. You can watch any number of 12 games, multiple countries, you know. Again, my 13-year-old Kyle, who goes to Hillfield as well, he debates with me whether the PSG goalie is better than the one from Barcelona. I'm like, okay, I give up. You win. But amazing what happens now and the depth of knowledge that's out there. So why not now is what I would like to say. Because if you look at the last three World Cups, Nick knows this as well as anybody else. The only team that has never, that came from a country that made the finals of the World Cup, that did not come from a country of the Premier League, was Iceland. And we all know that because of the size of the country, their players are allowed to play elsewhere. So, but if we don't have a Premier League, we'll never be on that world stage. I believe we'll never be on it again. So, you know, ourselves at the CPL, working with Canada Soccer, we think we can really turn it around in this country.
Excellent. I know, obviously, launching the CPL was part and parcel of Canada Soccer's Strat Plan, which makes it even more important because that is the route towards developing opportunities for our best players. So for the people that are new to the game, talk a little bit about what this league is going to look like. Obviously, we haven't announced official clubs or cities across the country, but give us kind of a sense of the lay of the land in terms of where do we expect to see play occur, you know, how national is this going to be, that sort of thing.
Sure. So from a regionality perspective, expect coast to coast. We're talking to clubs and owner groups and municipalities, communities, I'd like to say, right across the country. So from west to east, we are at this point in time. When I first announced in the role, I told people that we were talking to 12 to 15 communities. In actual fact, we now have engaged with three other communities, so we're up to 18 different communities that we're talking to right now. Now, not everyone is exactly in the same place. They're all on a different path. So there's not an expectation on our path, our part, that we would expect to see that many clubs playing. Quite frankly, that might be a little bit more than manageable in the early days. We're actually looking to launch next year with 8 to 10 teams. And we're very comfortable in coming out with that. We think that's the right place. If you look at a lot of the countries of Europe that play, many of them, other than the real big ones, do have about 10 to 12 Premier League teams in their top two leagues. And so that's where you would be. Now, from a fan base perspective, very impressed with the level of enthusiasm from the supporter groups. And since the word started leaking out that we were looking at doing this, supporter groups, I think as many as 16 supporter groups have just popped up out of nowhere in different cities like Hamilton. I think the Barton Street Battalion.
Yes, Barton Street Battalion. We're one of the first here in Hamilton, proud to say.
He says it like he's a founding member, doesn't he? those have popped up, and obviously we're engaging in those supporters as well to make sure they're part of the process and they have a say in what's going on. So we're pleased with that. And we also recognize, too, that we're not going to be a league that's going to fill stadiums, to the level of the EPL. You know, with 55,000 people per game. That's not going to happen. What we want to be is somewhere in the neighborhood of 6,000 to 10,000 fans in our first few years. That'll be a good game, good product on the field, entertaining, and we'll be developing not only players, but we'll be developing coaches and administrative people that work in that soccer industry. So, it's a realistic point of view, but making sure that we're doing the right things.
Yeah, and I like the approach of being methodical. And of course, in addition to the fan experience, there's going to be, because we're new, we can also invest in a digital experience as part of the sport. Let's talk a little bit about supporters groups, because supporters groups are a very unique part of soccer that don't exist in the predominant sports that we have, let's say, in the Toronto GTA area. When you look at the Blue Jays and the Argos, for most of us, the first glimpse that we ever got about supporter groups was TFC and the south side of the bleachers, and we all know what happened, obviously, with them this past year. So how do you as a commissioner work with the supporters group to make sure that they're kind of the engine of momentum for the league?
Well, that's a great question. So first and foremost, soccer is a community-based sport. I mean, it takes a really robust community that supports the teams in order to be successful, right? We recognize that right off the bat. I talked about the supporters clubs that have popped up, literally lobbying us and the municipalities for a team, I would even go further than lobbying. I would say demanding a team, like that level of intensity. Now, what we've done is we have a team of 4 to 5 people, depending on which town we're going to, that are traveling across the country right now, actually meeting with these clubs, and also meeting with city officials, and meeting with the ownership groups in those areas to talk about the teams and what they're looking for. We're engaging those supporters in what the uniforms could look like, the naming of the clubs themselves. And you won't be surprised to hear that probably the toughest meeting we had, not the toughest, it was probably the loudest voice of all was in Hamilton. Hamiltonians had a real viewpoint on what they thought their club needed to look like, what it needed to be named, and what they needed to wear. So it was very interesting to see that. I look at that, and I don't look at it the wrong way, I see passion. And so when you get that level of passion, that's important. So, that's the key thing. We want to engage. I can't say this enough, you have to build from the community level up. Perfect example, in the English Premier League, right? You think about the English Premier League, Burnley is in the English Premier League. Burnley is a town of 50,000 people. 50,000 people, and they are big enough to support, right? Better part of 30,000 fans a game, sold out, impossible to get a ticket, and they support a club that competes in probably, I would say it's the biggest top tier league in the world. So that's 50,000 people in that town. Granted, they pull from around it, but you can see how important communities are. Without the community support, professional sports teams do not exist today.
So we talked about the importance of supporters groups. Obviously, one of the objectives of the league is to help support the development of the Canadian player. Because the Canadian player needs to get better, because our national team is not where it needs to be. I think we can all agree with that. In the background, of course, there's this other big pending thing, which is a bid for the World Cup in 2026. The decision for the World Cup bid will be made in early June in Moscow, just before the World Cup this summer. Let's say Canada gets the bid. In partnership with the U.S. and Mexico, we get to host a bunch of games. It'll absolutely revolutionize soccer in this country, just like it did for the U.S. in 1994, which allowed them to launch MLS. My question has to do with the Canadian-ness of the league. And I know we may not know specifics in terms of, how many players have to be on the field born in Canada, et cetera. We don't want to get down to that minutia, but how important is it for U.S. commissioner to make sure that the Canadian-ness is there, not only for players, but as you said, the coaching staff, the physio, medical people, the marketing person, the social media person. This is truly a Canadian league. We want to make sure that we have Canadian manpower and women power, for that matter, involved with it.
Sure. Again, great point. As commissioner, I believe it's part of my mandate to ensure that we develop not only Canadian soccer players, but also coaches and also administration people that will work in the industry of soccer. We have had discussions. I can't get into too many details on it, but we have had discussions with our owner groups that are talking to us about launching clubs. And what gives me great comfort is that as we talk about it, all around the table, their heads are nodding yes. They understand. We're talking about Canadian content rules. That's that, right around it. And that goes down to how many people on the roster, at what age group are you ensuring that players under 20 get time on the field with the big team and they don't get hit in the background.
Yeah.
And so how many, how much time they actually get to play. So we need to do that. And you know, it's a new league. We've got a bit of a whiteboard, which is a wonderful thing. You ever get a chance to be in a business that has a whiteboard you start with, it's a lot of fun. And it's kind of awesome because you can make up the rules yourself. Having said all that, we want to follow the FIFA model. But again, we want to make sure that we, A, put a great product on the field, but we also are developing Canadians, and that's very important to us. And what our partners at Canada Soccer believe in the same thing, and so again, I see that as a mandate for ourselves.
How does the CPL consider working? You talked about creating a soccer industry, but the one thing we can't ignore, of course, is the three elephants in the room, which is obviously Vancouver, Montreal, and Toronto. So how will the CPL choose to position itself, given that MLS does exist in this country already, although it's obviously American organized and American run? What will the relationship be between the CPL and the MLS, if any?
So at this point in time, really, there's not a relationship other than the fact that there are clubs that are owned by the American League. It's not a Canadian league, in three Canadian cities. I am very impressed with, personally, I'm very impressed by what the MLS has done, obviously in Toronto. But also in Vancouver and Montreal. It's great to see that. I mean, it's certainly done a lot for soccer in Canada. We don't see, we also believe, though, that in a city the size of Toronto, there should be room for multiple clubs in the GTA. And so we're talking to others already, right? And so we see the same for Vancouver, and we see the same for Greater Montreal, if you want to call it. So there's lots of room. The water's warm. Everybody can come on in. And we also see a little bit of a crossover too, because when you get to the Canadian Championships, in the past it would have been, the three MLS clubs and a couple of clubs like Ottawa Fury and Edmonton FC, and that would have made up the Canadian Championship. Well, not anymore, because now we launch with, call it 10 teams, 8 to 10 teams. There's those 10 teams will be in the Canadian Championship, three MLS clubs will be in, so it's a different type of exercise. You need not look any further than what's going on in the English FA Cup right now to see the excitement that happens when smaller clubs play against some of the bigger clubs and what can happen. It really just dials things up overall. And, I was watching the FA Cup matches on the weekend, and a place like Newport, stadium has 5,000 fans, and they are rabid fans, like maniacs. It's the biggest thing that's ever happened to that town, right? When a big club shows up to play their team, and so it's certainly a great atmosphere. So again, those types of crossovers. And then of course we see with CONCACAF, there'll be a domestic league champion that should get an automatic berth in the CONCACAF League of Nations, or what we would call the Champions League, so to speak, as well as the Canadian Championship. That title should go as well. So again, lots of room.
Yeah.
Good to see what they're doing, and we hope to be as successful.
Yeah, and I like the analogy you talked about the kind of Goliath and the small story. The CPL will have a route, obviously, as we know, into the CONCACAF Championships. For those of you in the audience that may not be familiar with the acronyms that we're throwing out there, CONCACAF, of course, is the North America, Central America, Caribbean region of FIFA. Toronto FC is blazing the path for the CPL, in fact, because as many of you know, on Feb 20, they will be playing in that first round. And the further you go, the higher the probability that you will end up playing a Barcelona or a Bayern Munich in the World Club Championships. And I know it's hard to believe, but you just imagine what would happen if a Hamilton FC or whatever they decide to be called ends up playing one of the biggest names in the world. I think it would be an amazing story. So I love that carrot that is available to every team in the CPL.
For sure.
So let's move over a little bit to some other items, David. Let's talk about broadcasting. I think it's a very, very important discussion. It's a new league. Very, very difficult for brand new, small embryonic entities to be put on TSN nationwide, coast to coast. I mean, that's unrealistic to a certain respect. So how do you as commissioner deal with that? Because there's a chicken and the egg problem. We're not going to make it on TSN coast to coast, yet we still need TSN coast to coast at the beginning in order to get our league off the ground and become popular.
Sure. What's happened in the world of broadcasting just over the last few years has been unbelievable change, right? When you look at what's going on now. And and what's happening with streaming and digital and all that that's out there. I don't know if you saw the announcement yesterday, but if you're big soccer fans, you probably saw that LAFC, which is one of the newest MLS teams, it's just about ready to play. In fact, I think their first friendly game is against TFC in the next couple of days. They announced yesterday that not only the uniforms, but also they did a deal to broadcast all of their games on streaming through YouTube. So YouTube is taking on those games. And so they're geofencing the LA market so that all LA fans can see the games on YouTube by streaming. So as we look at it, we're talking to everybody. Obviously, traditional broadcast in Canada, it's a duopoly. Let's be honest, there's only two. So there's that opportunity. But it's not, as Nick said, it's not very easy for fledgling leagues or just like any business getting off the ground that way. But there's an opportunity to do both. So digital streaming and traditional broadcasting, but you can pick and choose how you want to do it. So I think there's a tremendous opportunity for us. And again, it's another one of those indicators of why now? Why can you do it? Because the world has changed this way. And so more people will be exposed to that. And certainly in the towns and communities where we're actually doing soccer business.
So if I can paraphrase you, and correct me if I'm wrong, everything's on the table. YouTube, Netflix, Amazon.com, all the new age way this population watches
sure.
stuff. Not sure. Necessarily how we used to watch stuff is on the table.
And it's interesting because there are, I'm not going to name names, maybe I will, but there are broadcast type digital network, if you want to call it, companies that don't even exist in Canada today, in very, very small in Canada, that see this opportunity as a way to break into Canada. And they look at Canada as a nice ripe plum, right? So there's no doubt, and they see a huge amount of opportunity in this marketplace for doing some what I call non-traditional broadcasting. So yeah, everything's on the table. I think that's the way you have to approach things. And let's make it right for the supporters and the fans.
Excellent. Okay, let's change gears here and talk about players. You know, we got a university/high school audience right here. Some of them I know personally are burgeoning soccer players. What sort of plan do we have in place? Will there be a draft? Will there be a connection to, you know, U-Sport, which of course used to be called CIS, which used to be called CIAU, keeps on changing its name. How do we go about developing that pathway so that if we do have a McMaster University varsity soccer athlete, what would potentially or theoretically be the pathway for them to end up playing, you know, in Hamilton or Winnipeg, let's say?
Sure. So we haven't finalized how we're going to do this, but we've knocked around ideas like we would take university soccer players and put them in a draft, similar to what other sports do. We also have a number of people within our business, moving along with Canada Soccer, understanding who are the players that are out here today. Because, frankly, let's dream big. Right? Canada actually, we win the bid for the World Cup in 2026. And Canada gets a portion of the games that are being played. We also believe that we would get an automatic bid. Right? An automatic bid would be wonderful. What team are we going to put on the field? Because you can't get run out of the park. Right? And so, you actually, when you start to think it through, they're probably, if there's any burgeoning soccer players that are very good in this audience today, you could be one of those players in 2026 because people that are playing today,
17, 18 years old.
Yeah, they're going to be 17, 18 years old. They're going to be the ones playing. And so the whole idea of, you know, we just announced yesterday James Easton is our new VP of soccer operations. So everything that happens on the field with players and how we handle referees and everything else, he's dealing with that. He is so steeped in soccer. And you know, I'm very pleased that we were able to bring him onto the team because he has a wealth of knowledge. He's played the game, he understands the game, he's advised on how to build leagues and things like that in the past. So there's tons of different ways to do it, but the most important thing is it's going to be very inclusive. Obviously, we recognize that a lot of good players also go and play overseas. That doesn't mean that he can't come back as well. That's key.
Let's do a fun thing, Dave. Let's do some crystal ball gazing, okay? So 10 years from now, everything goes great. We launch, it grows, 2026 happens, we play awesome in Canada. What does the CPL look like in 10 years?
Oh. So 10 years from now, let's dream really big, and let's say we won that bid. I mean, my dream long term, because I've said all the way along, we want to follow the FIFA model, which is very different than the MLS. So our model talks about starting playing in April and finishing in October. We don't really think that November, December, January, February, March are really good months to be playing soccer in this country. There's not enough warm clothing in the world that can help you with that. So we believe in that, and so league champion, that kind of thing. Having said all that, that allows us the opportunity, now the big dream part, allows us the opportunity to potentially go to a second and a third tier, and going into smaller communities as well. But so you're starting to emulate what's happening around the globe. It also allows us to do this wonderful thing called promotion and relegation, where the best teams in the lower league go up into the big league, and the lower teams are not the best teams at the bottom of the table, they go down to the next league down. And so that creates this spirit of competition that's unbelievable, right? If you watch soccer at all around the globe and you see how this works, it's fantastic how it works. So I think that's, for me, is an opportunity. It won't happen overnight, but it will happen.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned two things, obviously, no playoffs, and promotion relegation, which happen to be two features of no other professional league in North America. So it makes the CPL unique in that regard. Just playing devil's advocate for a sec, how do the founding owners feel knowing, okay, I'm going to spend millions of dollars getting my club ready for a fledgling league, and now my commissioner just told me, you know, in a few years there might be promotion relegation, which is all that money that I just spent, and now I'm going to be downloaded to the second tier or worse. How do we deal with that kind of chicken and egg problem?
Well, the first thing is the top league is not going to be at capacity for a while, because we're gonna open up with 8 to 10. We're probably gonna, we'll start to announce late spring about ones that are gonna come on in 2020. But we know that we can be somewhere between 12 and 16 teams in that top league before it starts to get crowded.
Right.
So that's one opportunity. Owners, they understand. Remember what I said: passion for soccer. So passion for the game, and patience, and understanding what it takes to get it to be a real Premier League in this country. So they're on board for that. I'm sure we will have lots of discussion around that as we move forward. But I think the other thing too is, if we want this game, this wonderful game, right, to really take hold in this country the way it should, all the way to the top end at professional level, we need to also be able to reach smaller locations.
Right.
It can't just be the Torontos, the Montreals, the Vancouvers of the world that have teams. We need to get to the Londons. We need to get to the,
Windsors.
The Windsors, the Barry, we need to be able to get there. You can do that today without having to build $200 million stadiums, too. That's the other thing that's changed. The game's changed there, too. There's some wonderful things that are happening there. We'll talk about that in some of our releases coming out, about what we're doing with some of the new stadiums that are being built as part of this project. Very affordable. So affordable, expandable, adaptable. Those are all the able words work really well with this. And the municipalities, the communities love that, because now all of a sudden it doesn't, you're asking us to be part of potentially a white elephant. Is this going to be something that we're going to be paying in taxes for forever? All experienced that,
right.
So I think that's what's really important as we move forward.
So on that note, great segue. Let me add another word, which is equitable, and I'm talking about gender here.
Yeah.
We can't talk soccer in this country unless we talk about women first, frankly, before the men, because it's the women that have actually put soccer on the map in this country with the two bronze medals that we've had back to back. CPL is not currently at all discussing women. I can appreciate that. But at some point in time, that discussion is going to have to occur, because it's 50% of the population and 50% of the market. As commissioner, what sort of response are you giving to people who are saying, hey, listen, why are we always ignoring, that side of the game, especially in Canada, when it's such a dominant part of our game in this country?
Sure. First of all, I always respond with, we're not ignoring it. We understand it. Our first job is to get the men's Premier League up off the ground. But I don't think it will be that too far in the future before the momentum and the pressure will start. But what do we do with a professional women's league? And I think there's a great opportunity there. As someone who has five children, three of which are daughters, all of which have played, and now one of them is actually even coaching my grandson, so that we're at that level. I see a real path for that, or going forward, and it should be that way. So it's just a matter of time. And so again, we've got to be somewhat patient because you can only handle so much at one time. But it's there. And we've got some great lady athletes in this women athletes in this country. You don't have to go any further than the women's soccer national team to see what kind of talent we have and what we put on the field.
I'm glad to hear that. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, we've been a little flowery and positive here. Let's talk a little bit about kind of the real threats. You know, as business people, we would never survive if we didn't talk about, you know, threats. What are some of the things, David, that really keep you up at night? I mean, things that perhaps maybe not in our control, things that might go wrong. You know, what are some of the things that you want to kind of keep your pulse on, you know, as we go ahead looking at launch, and we're what, T-minus kind of 14 months to launch? What are some of those potential barriers and bottlenecks that we need to kind of keep in the back of our head?
Well, I mean, personally for myself, you're launching a new business that's not just one, it's not a single prong, right? You've got a number of teams you're working with, and you're all racing for the finish line, right? So we've got to keep them all on side. Because again, it's a business that you're building here, but you're literally building 10, as much as 10 businesses. Let's go with 10 for April of 2019. You're talking about developing 10 businesses. You're talking about stadium rights out there. Where do we deal with, you know, stadiums, or are we building new? How are we building those? So there's some really cool ideas that are happening overseas that we've seen from a modular stadium type perspective that are really very interesting in the way they're put together. So it's not the same traditional way that we would build stadiums like we did with Tim Hortons Field. So there's a lot of that going on. There's obviously the talent and making sure that we have all the right talent. So there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of balls in the air when it comes to the 10 teams. At the same time, you've got an actual business that you're doing on the back end. So the professional league, the CPL, actually is a business that has to run as well. So that has to go. So you're launching that business. All this is happening simultaneously, and you can't afford to miss anything. So it's just making sure that no ball gets dropped, and the train keeps rolling forward. That's the key thing. So,
excellent, thank you. We're going to change gears for a sec because I want to provide some added value to obviously the students that are in the audience. And you can answer this question both as Tim Hortons executive as well as the CPL. But you know, we got a bunch of burgeoning sports executive wannabes. A bunch of people here sitting here saying, "I want David's job in 10 years." Or I want to be part of the sports management world, not necessarily as commissioner of CPL. Let's do the standard. You know, what advice do you have for, you know, third, fourth year students that are getting close to graduating? You know, how do they break into, not necessarily the soccer business world, but, you know, just sports management in general?
So first of all, anyone wants my job 10 years from now, I will be happy to hand over the keys to you if I'm here 10 years from now. That means we've been very successful, right? So, at the end of the day, you know, when it comes to sports management, you know, this is not, for me, you know, it's not that I grew up in a business where I learned sports management. I understood sport in general. I participated quite a bit. I helped with leagues as I got older. I applied things that I learned in business to that world. And that's the key thing, is how to find that intersection of what you know about business in order to apply it there. You can't just be somebody who's just been involved in sports and then think, well, I'm going to get into the management part of it. It doesn't work that way. You have to have a well-rounded business background in order to do that. So regardless of what you want to do, make sure that you take care of that first. That's going to be, because people are going to look at you and say, all right, it's wonderful that you understand the sports part of it. You need to know the business part.
Excellent. So I'm going to open it up. Does anybody have any questions for the new league commissioner? Please raise your hand. Go ahead.
A couple things. One, on the subject of online streaming, have you considered platforms that are more normally used for electronic sports, such as a Twitch stream?
No. Everything is on the table. Whiteboard, everything's there. We've talked to companies that are, you know, we've even, our first meeting, I won't say who it was, but was with a company outside of Canada that came over from Europe to talk to us. And so we're looking at everything and anything. I will say this to you, we do believe that there's a combination, some sort of a hybrid model that'll work here between traditional and, I'll call it, non-traditional broadcasting. So there's a number of different ways we can look at this. If you had told me 2 years ago a company like YouTube would be live streaming sports on their platform. I would have never believed it, not a million years. So you see how things are changing, and frankly, you're the ones that are changing.
Yeah, sure. You'll decide. You'll know better.
You'll decide with what we're doing.
Excellent question. Yes, sir.
What are the top needs that you have from here in the next 14 months? Is it like coach development, players, is it broadcasting? How do you think about the priorities and the top needs you have over the next few months?
Top needs in my line of sight right now over the next 14 months is not about players. We've already pulled with all the connections we have across the country. We know where all the good players are. We have a long list of good players, in the hundreds, so we're not worried about that. We've actually got a great list of coaches, Canadian coaches as well, but there's also some foreign coaches available, so we're talking about that as well. So that's less of the issue. It's about putting all the building blocks in place for the business and making sure the teams get there. Right? So if you think about it, right, first and foremost, you know, at the end of the day, you have to have the financial story has to be there, right? You have to have somewhere to play, and you have to have an organization that's ready to take on a team and then move it forward, right? And then it's all the organization around the league part, games, where they're played, how they're played, broadcasting, what can we do there? There's a lot of parts. I can't say that there's any one priority bigger than the other, because it's they all kind of work together. It's a puzzle, right, that all has to come together.
Excellent. Great question, thank you. Yes, sir, in the back.
Yes, I have a question. How are you going to make it more easy for players from overseas in terms of visas and things like that?
These are foreign players.
Foreign players
attracting them back to the CPO. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's no doubt there'll be some. They're gonna have to come in on visas, that's for sure. But it's like anything else on a work visa. We don't anticipate any problems. We see other leagues dealing with that today, you know, whether it be the NHL or
yep.
the CFL or those type of NBA. No issue that way. I mean, they have a job to come to and they go back. What I will say to you though is people ask me all the time, do you think people will actually want to come to Canada to play professional sport? And my answer is absolutely. Absolutely, and I'll tell you why. Because people view this country as a great place to come to and a great place to live. And a great place to even raise a family.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very desirable that from that perspective. And you think about, you know, some of the places around the world that are out there today, they're very different. We're very lucky to live in a country like we have today. Although I'm sure we all wake up and over a cup of tins, we all complain about certain things about the country, but if we didn't have anything to complain about, we'd have nothing else to talk about. So.
And the evidence is there too, I believe. All you have to do is look at the existing MLS clubs and to think of the foreign players they've attracted. Never in a million years would you ever think that that's the type of player that would play here. Excellent question. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
So you guys discussed a lot about like developing players. So how do you plan on developing players who are in the U Sports League between the ages of like 20 or 18 to 21 who hypothetically won't be available until 21? So how do you develop those players?
That's a good point, because we're back and forth talking about the academy net, like the academy model where academies are done. We're not necessarily looking to do that, because it's harder to do when you start to get into smaller clubs and smaller cities, right? So the key thing is to work with our partners at the CSA and our Canadian Soccer Association, and work with them and develop the right pool, the data pool that gives us who's out there, who they're playing with, and those types of things. The most important thing is to understand where they are, make sure that we're running clinics, doing all that developmental work. And that's one of the key things that we'll work with Canadian Soccer.
If I could just add to that question, you really, really quickly kind of brushed over this, but in addition to a Canadian content rule, there potentially could be a young player rule.
That's right.
What is the typical age that seems to have been bantered about?
Under 20 is really what.
Under 20.
What countries are looking at nowadays, if you look around the globe, A lot of the content is around under 20, because that's the next level, right? And so it's not uncommon now to hear people talking about, well, if someone's signed by a big club, they literally don't sit on the bench. They have to play so many minutes. They have to participate in so many games. I saw 2 17-year-olds playing for Chelsea on the weekend, and the FA Cup game. Now, they came on in the late in the second half, but I mean, that's unbelievable to see a 17-year-old playing at that level. And again, that's all part of the development, because you don't know what you have until you actually put them out there with the best in the world.
Throw them in the fire.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, we got time for one last question. Yes, sir.
You mentioned that the international league obviously grow Canadian players, so is there a policy to kind of implement that, like with minimum number of Canadian players on each team, or a restriction on that?
Yeah, that's as I said, Canadian content is really what we're talking about, right? Like, there's no doubt that we've talked about it. We've not settled on anything yet. As you can imagine, it's, you know, a big debate. Like people, but I will say this to you. What I've seen personally around the world is that countries that embrace that philosophy tend to do very well in developing younger players, and their countries tend to do very well in international competitions, both at the under 21 level and then at the men's level. I have actually seen countries save their soccer programs by adopting those types of rules. There's an argument that says when you allow too many imports, you water down your own opportunities within your country. And so we have to be careful that we don't want to do that. Look at the MLS, right? Great league, right? Tremendous success, taken off like a rocket. U.S. is not in the World Cup. It's coming up. Now, there's a number of things that caused that, but you could argue maybe not enough U.S. players playing at their top level in order to be able to do that. So we have to be careful that we don't want to do that. Again, part of our mandate is to work with the Canada Soccer in order to be able to strengthen the overall national programs, both in men and women.
Okay, guys, thank you. I want to thank, obviously, David for bringing his insights to all of you. Very proud to have David here. Obviously, it was one of his first public appearances with students, which is fantastic, and acknowledge his expertise not only from Tim Hortons, but also from taking this league forward. I'm sure we'll be watching and cheering on and purchasing tickets and supporting the league. So
that's the key, purchasing tickets. I like that.
All right, we have some closing remarks here. And
on behalf of our team, we would like to thank you for your presentation. I know very little to, if anything, about soccer, and I think one of the points that you made that really resonated with me was, you know, starting small and then building up your brand, your position, your people. And one of the themes of the conference, of course, is practical business applications. So we thank you for that, and to tangibly express our gratitude for your time and your presentation, you have this. Team. So if everyone could give a warm
Okay, guys, as always, our McMaster students want to exit to your left and then re-register and come around, swipe the cards for the next session. We will be started again back in here at the top of the hour. Thank you.
It's 43 minutes, wow.